Black Tree Crime is a podcast that researches and discusses murders committed by Black offenders. It is a podcast that anyone and everyone is welcome to enjoy, but it may not be enjoyed by anyone and everyone, so listener discretion is advised. Now, without further ado, this is Black Tree Crime.
Do not go gentle into that good night.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, guys.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mama Nikki.
And this is Black True Crime. And if this is your first time here at the show, friend, welcome and hello.
Come on in, have a seat. We're all here today, so it's going to be a party.
Mm-hmm. A party. I like parties.
And this is the perfect party case because a lot's going on. There's some tea that's being spilled. You know, a little bit of drama. And we're going to get to it.
Well, let's get into it.
Mm-hmm. Mother, are you ready? Are you going to be on your best behavior?
Nope.
All right. Let's get started.
That's how we like you.
Raw and unthawed. Okay.
Let's do it.
On July 4th, 2009, a famous athlete was shot 4 times in a condo that he shared with some friends and always felt comfortable at. His death shocked the people closest to him and the fans that had grown to love him. And what was the motive behind his murder? A tale as old as time. So join us as we discuss what led to the murder of NFL quarterback Steve McNair.
I knew he looked familiar.
You don't know nothing about no football.
I know last name McNair. Mm. And do.
Okay.
And he cute.
Oh, he's
cute. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Steve.
When does that happen?
We'll get to it, Mom.
Okay.
Alrighty, so Steve Latreau McNair was born on Valentine's Day in 1973 in Mount Olive, Mississippi.
Dang, Ma, he close to your age.
He close your daddy age 3 days after.
Wow.
Yeah, literally. He was actually born in a small house with like a tin roof. So it was, you know, a rough situation,
humble,
but he made it.
Humble beginning.
Very much so.
Mississippi, a southern boy.
He grew up with 4 brothers, Fred, Jason, Michael, and Tim.
The Brady Bunch.
I was about to say, it's just a good old Brady Bunch. Steve always gave athletic. And when he started his freshman year at Mount Olive High School in 1987, he started playing basketball.
We're playing basketball. Ball. He looks like a basketball player, but he got a thick neck.
Yeah, he got a football neck.
Mm-hmm. Baseball.
Ooh.
And football.
He was an all-star. Oh. Mm-hmm.
And he ran track.
Wow.
Right. And he was
a beautiful smile.
Gorgeous smile. Mm-hmm. And he was literally good at all of it.
That's like Deion Sanders. He was a all around. He played everything, did everything.
Shout out to Deion.
Mom, mm-hmm. What you know about Deion?
I love Coach Prime Time. I love Coach Prime Time.
You missed it. She was dancing.
Oh, my God.
I have to just put this in a better position so you can see her.
Shout out to my handsome granddaddy that I claim.
Okay.
He just always reminds me of somebody that's, like, familial.
Mm. Yeah, he get my Uncle Benoit kind of vibe.
He really got to do with the big nostrils.
All right.
Yeah. I like him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. During his 11th grade year, he led his school to the football state championship.
Steve!
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. In 1991, he was drafted by the Seattle Mariners, which is a baseball team.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, MLB. He was offered a scholarship to the University of Florida to play the position of running back, but he wanted to be a quarterback instead. So he ended up going to Alcorn State University, which is an HBCU in Mississippi.
And that's what
hurt. Period.
Because, like, also that's his hometown too. He doesn't have to go too far from his family, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he gets to play the position he wants at a HBCU. Shout out to the HBCUs.
Shout out to the HBCUs. While playing in college, he set records. He was recognized as an All-American multiple times. He just was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He also found
gifted.
He was. He also found time to become a member of the Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and he took it seriously enough to get Omega Man tattooed on his arm.
I don't really agree with frats and sorors. Don't come for me, black folks.
Do not.
Don't okay? come for
Everyone
me.
Everyone has a preference.
But go ahead, mm-hmm. Steve.
Fast forward to 1995. Steve was the third overall pick in the NFL draft that year.
Oh, my God.
And he was drafted by the Houston Oilers.
All right.
He was signed to a 7-year contract and became the highest drafted black quarterback in NFL history at the time.
This is humongous. Hey. We all know that they didn't think we were good enough to be quarterbacks until not too recently.
Which is so crazy.
He is so handsome. He looks like somebody from today.
I'm telling you, he looks like he's like with the times.
Well, he only died a little while ago.
Well, you didn't tell us when, so we're just shooting off the hip at this point.
All right. Well, yeah, he's a nice-looking man. But although he made history during the draft, he didn't really get to play until the last two plays of a November game against the Cleveland Browns. He played for a short period of time and a few more games that year, and it wasn't until the 1996 season that he got a chance to start a game against the Jaguars during Week 15.
Run it up,
okay. You know.
Okay.
His 1997 season was his first season as a starter, and although their record was 8-8 for the season, so they won 8, they lost 8, if you guys don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Steve had only 13 interceptions, which was the lowest number in Oilers franchise history.
Whoa, he's like trying to put the team on his back.
That same year, after the season was over, Steve married a woman named Michelle on June 21st, 1997.
Yay! We love love. Go, Michelle.
Got you a fine one.
All right.
Well, let's check her out first. I don't know.
See what she got going on. The couple
Did
had
go
purchased...
white or black? Because you know...
Mom!
Oh, this black she... girl cried. We told the truth.
She was a sister. She was a sister, so don't miss her.
Go, Michelle.
All right. And if she, Mom, I'm over her.
And if she was white, that's all right.
That's all right.
It's all right. But I'm just trying to see, because you know when people get football players, and especially our brothers, they forget the mothers. Mm. They forget the motherland. I mean, his history is plain. I mean, I love all people, but I'm just trying to see where he's coming from. Anyway, go ahead.
The couple had purchased a farm in Mississippi, which I love, and split their time between there and Nashville, Tennessee, because the Oilers ended up leaving Houston and going to Tennessee in 1999 and changing their name to the Titans.
Ooh, he's a Titan.
So he's a Tennessee Titan. Steve had two sons by two other women before he married Michelle.
Okay. Ooh.
Yeah, this is Steve.
That's Steve.
Steve, he grown man things.
Steve, when he say girl.
Kristen, Lord help us. Steve look like he barks, but in a good way.
Right, he's a cute all right. He fine.
Steve had two sons by two other women before he married Michelle. Their names are Steve Latrell McNair Jr. and Stephen O'Brien McNair.
Who did that?
I hate it.
Who let that man name both of his kids after him?
Two different Hormans.
Well, the thing of magic is, George Foreman did it. George. All what? Of the sixth George.
And who told him he could do that? That's so
narcissistic.
Conceited.
I'll throw up.
One woman.
No shade, but like it could never be me.
And then he and Michelle had two more sons named Tyler and Trenton.
Oh,
thank God. So that's them.
Oh, hey, chicken butts.
Yeah, super, super cute. In 1999, Steve ended up needing surgery for an inflamed disc. But once he recovered, he came back strong and played the St. Louis Rams and beat them.
Woo-hoo. Well, not surprised.
Well, St. Louis Rams. It's a surprise. They were good when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And then he ended up winning 7 of the last 9 games the Titans played that year, closing out their season with a 13-3 record.
Yay!
That's dope.
Come on, Steve. You went from an 8-8 to a 13-3?
Mm-hmm. Pretty neat.
With a bounce awesome. Back.
All right. This is the same year that Steve led the Titans all the way to the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow. My God.
I know. But unfortunately, in the last play of the game, which was a rematch, by the way, against the Rams. So he beat the Rams earlier. He's playing them in the Super Bowl. They end up losing.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. But because Steve showed how much of an asset he was for the Titans, he ended up signing a new 6-year contract, and it was worth $47 million.
Whoa, that's big time back then.
Talk big about a black man time. Getting paid.
Big time. Mm-hmm. For the next few years, Steve played well despite fighting multiple injuries, but unfortunately, he never made it back to the Super Bowl. Between the 2002 and 2003 seasons, he ended up catching a DUI charge and an illegal gun possession charge in May of 2003.
Come on, Steve. What you doing, Steve? You're not in the streets no more, Steve.
You got 4 kids, Steve.
You a grown tail man, Steve, $46 million. What you doing?
During his DUI, he blew a 0.10, which is only like 0.02 higher than the legal limit. So that's not bad.
That's not bad. Really at all. Not bad. I've done worse.
Okay. No shame, Mom. What? Okay, let's not dwell. But he did have a 9mm sitting in the front seat. So.
Oh, but honestly, I can get it now. I understand it. Like, when you say the charges, you're like, damn, Steve. But when you hear it and like, okay, he had a 9, everybody carries a weapon, right? Like
lots of people.
A lot of people carry weapons to protect themselves. And he probably went out to a bar, got a little bit too lit. Mm-hmm. And 0.1 to a big 6'4", 6'5 dude probably is just like, I'm buzzed. So he probably thought he was okay. But he wasn't.
But either way, it didn't matter because both of the charges would end up being dropped. Okay. A DUI and a gun charge. That must be nice.
Must be real nice. He's blessed/lucky.
Soups. During his 2003 season, he ended up becoming the youngest player in NFL history to pass for 20,000 yards and run for 3,000. So the guy was pretty good. You know, I know a lot of you guys are like, why are we talking about football? What are we doing here? But I want you guys to kind of see, like, where he was at, you know, how important Steve was to the game, the league, and, you know, a lot of people in the city of Tennessee or in the country. No, in the state of Tennessee, a lot of people loved him. And like with him being in Nashville, which is like where he was more so stationed, he used to help out in the community with children. Like he would, you know, give money and give his time and stuff like that. So he really got on the people's good side.
Which is really nice to hear. He's not just a celebrity with a lot of money. Yeah. He gives back.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm.
He ended up opening up his own restaurant in Nashville named Gridiron 9. Mm. So, and he loved that. He would like work there and he was foot to the ground. Steve continued to play for the Titans in 2004 and 5. And in 2006, the Titans decided that the best business decision for them was to ice him out.
Dang! What?
It was because he had so many injuries constantly. He was almost never able to complete a full season. Wow. I don't think he ever did, actually. They didn't even let him rehab in their facility because they thought it would force them to pay out the remainder of his contract, which was $23.5 million.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of money. Yeah, they did. They did try to play him.
Where did he get the injuries, Titans? He wasn't broke before he came to y'all.
Well, to be fair, he was having injuries when he was playing at the Oilers, which is basically the same team. So he did have some injuries, and football is not an easy game. Like, injuries are commonplace, but at the same time, we're paying you to play. And if you can't play, we don't mm-hmm. want to pay.
And he's the quarterback. You know, they don't have many quarterbacks they can just throw in when he has an injury. That's one of the main players.
Definitely not as good as Steve.
Right, that mm-hmm. part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Players Association ended up filing a grievance on Steve's behalf, and the final decision was that Steve's contract had been violated, so now he could be traded.
Good, but who's going to want good. Steve now?
Oh. The Ravens. On June 8th, on June 8th, 2006, he was traded to the Baltimore Ravens.
Woo-hoo! Oh my gosh, that's Lamar huge. Jackson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, he broke another franchise record when he threw an 89-yard touchdown pass during a game against the Chiefs. So the field is only 100 yards, and he threw 89 of those yards. He threw that far.
It's a big deal. That's why injuries are not right. Yep. In your face, Titans. Don't count Steve out.
Right. And to the people that don't care about football, we're almost done. Don't worry. On May 9th, 2007, Steve was arrested again for driving drunk in Nashville.
Come on, Steve.
Dang, go on, Steve.
Yeah, he liked to have a good time. Even though he wasn't the one that was actually driving. But in Tennessee, it's illegal to let someone drive your car that you know is intoxicated. And the driver at the time was his brother-in-law, so both men were arrested. But Steve's charges were dropped in July of 2007 after his brother pleaded guilty to reckless driving.
I'm sure he paid his brother a little something on the side.
I mean, it's the least his brother, you were driving.
I know. But also, like, you took the L for us, homeboy. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure you're taken care of and your people's just taken care of.
A couple of dollars. Yeah, $1.
You don't bite the hand that feeds you.
His 2007 season with the Ravens was a bit of a disappointment. He suffered another injury and was only able to play 6 out of the 15 games the team played that year. And at the end of the season, after 13 total in the NFL, Steve announced his retirement.
Thank God, Steve, because at this point, your body is screaming at you. It's telling you, I need a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm glad he listened. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was April 2008 when he announced his retirement. The Titans posthumously retired the jersey number in 2019. So his jersey number was 9. And they retired it, which was a big deal. He was inducted into the Black College Football Hall of Fame in 2012 and the College Football Hall of Fame in 2020. And again, these were honors that he was given after his death.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Because on the 4th of July, 2009, so this was like a little over a year after he officially retired, Steve McNair was found murdered in a condo in downtown Nashville.
Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah. So we're about to get into it. You're going to find out, Mom. You're probably going to, like, you know, Mom, she's always going to throw a guess out there.
And it's probably right.
Yeah, we welcome it. On Saturday, July 4th, 2009, 911 dispatchers received a call about a man who was deceased inside a condo on Leia Avenue. And the caller urged police to get there ASAP. When investigators arrived, they found 36-year-old Steve laying back on the couch suffering from multiple gunshot wounds.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. According to the medical examiner, Steve was shot twice in his chest and twice in the head.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. That was personal. Boom.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely personal. So it seems like he was actually shot in his head first, and then the person shot him in the chest.
Wow.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So it seems very, like, vengeful. Evil, targeted, all of the above.
Yeah, they want to take him out, make sure he was dead in the head, and then they went for the heart because he had broken somebody's heart and they wanted to kill his. Go ahead.
What? Well, dang.
Okay.
All of that. So she knows everything. And that was the case, y'all. Thanks for listening. Okay. This is sad, Mom. So the news about Steve's death spread like wildfire. Steve's wife and family were completely blindsided and understandably devastated. The Nashville community was grieving as well. There were people on the street that were interviewed about his death, and they were literally in tears.
Wow.
People of all shades, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They talked about how much he helped the youth in the community and how much he gave, you know, his time, and, like, he just genuinely loved them, and they felt the love, and it hurt them that he was gone.
Wow.
Titans owner Bud Adams released a statement saying, quote, "We are saddened and shocked to hear the news of Steve McNair's passing today. He was one of the finest players to play for our organization and one of the most beloved players by our fans. He played with unquestioned heart and leadership and led us to places that we had never reached, including our only Super Bowl." Oh
my God, that's beautiful. I would cry.
"Our thoughts and prayers are with his family as they deal with his untimely passing."
So why are you trying to jip him out of $23
million? Listen, business is business.
Okay.
The Titans held a 2-day memorial at LP Field on July 8th and 9th, and fans came to show their respects. There were, like, books there where fans could write notes to his family and just, like, say what he meant to them, and the books were given to his family later on. I thought that was beautiful.
Aww. Yeah, it was very.
And then at the memorials, they played, like, highlights from his career.
Oh, nice. Steve!
No, I miss him.
Mom. But I miss him a little bit too. Actually, do I miss him? I don't know, because we're going to get to it. Steve was a piece of fucking work. Every member of the 2009 season wore a number 9 sticker on the back of their helmets in honor of Steve. So everyone felt his absence. General manager of the Ravens, Ozzie Newsome, said, quote, "This is so, so sad. We immediately think of his family, his boys. They are all in our thoughts and prayers. What we admire most about Steve when we played against him was his competitive spirit. And we were lucky enough to have that with us for 2 years. He is one of the best players in the NFL over the last 20 years.
Period. He was only 36 years old.
Yeah.
He was young.
Super young. Which murder knows no age.
His kids were young.
They were. So I know that the pain, I don't want to even like think about it. And speaking of pain, Steve's funeral was held on July 11th at the University of South Mississippi's Reed Green Coliseum. So it was massive. There was like hundreds of people there that showed up, right? There are pictures of his mother grieving at the funeral that were literally published in newspapers, which I thought was a bit much.
It was.
Do I have the pictures? Yes, I do. I will share them. Ooh. Not in like a, you know, cruel way, but just to like make it more realistic, because this is somebody's child, you know? Mom. And the pain that she's going through clearly is just, I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Right, right. Wow. Wow. They did all that to put in the paper?
They did. They did. This very picture was in the newspaper. I was not happy about it.
That's so rude.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah, she's literally like, this is the worst day of her life.
Right.
Overall, Steve seemed to really be cherished and loved by many. So, rest in peace to Steve.
Rest in peace, Steve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Steve being loved by so many, when he was found deceased in the condo, on the floor at his feet laid another victim.
What?
Yeah. 20-year-old Sahel Kasemi. Kasemi. I don't know how to pronounce that. But before we talk about her, I do want to mention that their bodies were first discovered by a man named Wayne Neely. And he was actually the co-owner of the condo that Steve was found in. It was used sort of as a bachelor pad where, surprisingly, they could take their side chicks and peacefully cheat on their wives. So that morning, he was the one that showed up to the house first and said, and he said when he walked in, he saw Steve on the couch, but he thought he was just sleeping. So he went to the fridge to grab something to drink, and when he walked back toward the room, he saw that Steve obviously was not moving. He had been shot multiple times, and then he saw the woman dead on the floor as well.
Ooh, this is definitely a crime of passion.
It's given that, for sure. Like, off rip, that's what I think.
Yeah, because they kill his mistress, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just like I said. It was personal.
Very personal, Mom. Mm-hmm. So, Wayne left without saying anything. Didn't call the police, like, didn't exactly. He just left. And the reason he gave police was that he didn't want to blow up Steve's spot because he was with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to, like, I guess, be the person to call and basically say, like, yeah, Steve McNair is here dead with another woman.
Which means Wayne probably knew of Steve McNair's family. Like, maybe Wayne was a little bit more intertwined with Steve and he knew the repercussions of what would happen. But at the end of the day, you would still stay, right? That's your friend.
That's bull. That's bull. He dead. He and wife, mama, kids, nobody can beat his butt now. But you go tell. That's bull. That's bull. That's bull. He ain't got to save face.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I didn't agree with his decision at all to not call.
And it actually sounds like he's trying to cover his own behind.
Partially.
That's what it sounds like.
Partially, because he don't want to admit and let his wife find out, oh, that's where you be at.
That part, his whole spot, his spot would get blown up, not just Steve's.
Right. Playboy, go ahead.
Robert Gatti, who was another fan of Steve's, showed up to the condo about an hour later, and he was the one that officially called the police.
Dear Jesus.
Yeah, so there's a show on Discovery Plus. You can access it like through Prime as well. It's called Deadly Recall, and it's this detective that has a photographic memory, so he remembers like everything that he sees at a scene, every detail and stuff like that. And he was one of the people on the scene for
Steve McNair's.
Yeah, Steve's. So it's really cool. Like, there's many cases that he recalls and talks about, and Steve's is one of them. So I highly suggest you guys listen to it or watch it. It's season 2, episode 1.
Pure.
Okay.
Thank you for always putting us on.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, info, I'm not stingy. Info.
I'm not stingy, Cheo. When investigators started looking at the scene, they didn't know what exactly had happened. They didn't know if it was a robbery or a crime of passion or what. Clearly, they're not as good as us. And when they found the gun used to kill both Sahel and Steve, they were even more confused because usually you don't find the murder weapon at the scene.
Right.
But they did. And where it was found added to the uncertainty. Where was it found? Under Sahel's body, soaked in her blood.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I got a question. Question.
Uh-huh.
Were they naked?
They were clothed, Mom.
They were in the clothes when they found them?
Yes. Oh, so they weren't caught in the act.
I just wonder how she get down on the floor and he on the couch. I didn't know the position.
Mom, please.
Visual.
Maybe she was standing. Mm-hmm. And why was the gun under her as if she was holding it?
And like fell on top of it?
Yeah.
Oh, unless she killed him and then herself. That would make sense.
Wow, Mom. That's crazy. We're going to get to it.
Oh, my God.
So Sahel, who went by Jenna, and her friends called her that because she reminded them of like J-Lo's Jenny from the Block era.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why they, where they got that from. So that's her.
She looks nutty.
So Jenna, she had a really like tough life in the beginning. And I don't want to say it started with, but it definitely didn't make it any better when she lost her mom when she was 9 years old. Her mom was actually murdered.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. So she came to the States. She first lived in Jacksonville, Florida. And it seems like trouble just continued to follow her. I don't want to say she was like bad, but she was a teenage girl with little to no guidance. So
she was naughty.
You know what she that may naughty. Look like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When she was 16, she ended up moving to Nashville with her 20-year-old boyfriend named Keith Norfleet.
Mm.
Gross, Keith. Gross.
She was just trying to survive, bless her heart. She was just a baby.
Just a baby. Their relationship didn't last long, though, and by December 2008, they were no longer together. And this was the same month that Jenny ended up meeting Steve.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Steve and Jenny met at Dave & Buster's at the mall Opry Mills. I think that's a mall. I don't know. That's where Jenny was working at the time. So The 19-year-old and the 35-year-old felt a pretty instant connection and started seeing each other after that.
Ooh-wee. Jenny is a fast one.
Hey, she's living life by the seat of her pants.
And well, she better hold on tight.
Hold on tight,
she's
girl.
She's surviving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Things seemed to be moving fast, too. Steve was telling her that he loved her.
Oh, Steve.
The couple was going on trips together.
Steve.
They vacationed in Las Vegas and Florida, just to name a few places. They were taking pictures together. And Steve was, you know, obviously paying for everything and also lying to his wife of over 10 years about where he was at, what he was doing.
Of course he was. What a great example for your children, which is no shame. Like, we all have our little things that we shouldn't probably do. But at the same time, like, she's young.
Yeah.
And you're just showboating her
gallivanting
around.
Gallivanting around town.
Like, you don't have a whole family.
Yeah.
No.
And even more disgustingly, Jenny had introduced Steve to her family. And Jenny told her close friends that she had even gone to Mississippi with Steve to meet some of his family members.
Lord have mercy.
What? That's
the family it? Members of a married man.
A.K.A. some niggas and his family.
That part.
Like, to be fair, you can't trust family members. They're just as doggy as,
right.
as a man.
They don't sure
lie
are.
And play like, oh my God, he loves you, girl. He's never felt like this about anybody.
Like, what you think they doing while they paying spades and backgammon? Cutting up about what they be doing.
Yeah, and then they still on payroll.
Mm-hmm. None of the biting of the hand, like Mom mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny wasn't, like, completely innocent, obviously. Like, she was well aware that she was married
there
to Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
But in true lying trash man fashion, Steve was telling her that he was about to divorce his wife so they could be together forever.
Wow. I think a lot of people think their lives will not come back to them. It's giving, it's going to come back to you, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we already know that he did.
Ooh, oops. Well, he don't know that yet, Mom.
Hold on. Oh, okay. Oh, that's what we're coming from.
He don't know that yet.
Okay, Pooh, sorry.
And according to one of her friends, Steve had personally told that friend that he planned on marrying Jenny. And soon. Like, wow. He was like, I can't wait to start my life with her. You guys are all going to be in the wedding. This is what he was telling people in her life. Pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I got a story to tell.
Tell it now. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We cannot stress enough the importance of mental health, okay? And I know for some of us, it's easy to manage, like just doing self-care things, you know, every now and then for yourself or meditating and stuff like that. But for some of us, we need to dig a little deeper. I've been in therapy for the last month and a half, and it's done me so much good. Even just my ability to communicate with people, my partner, it's definitely been a positive addition to my life. And if you're in the same boat as me and are looking for a little bit of help of just navigating life and your own feelings and your own thoughts in a healthy way, I highly suggest trying out BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/blackchewcrime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/blackchewcrime to get 10% off your first month. Protect your peace, protect your space, and protect your mental health. Okay, back to the episode.
So, my uncle did something like that today. I always go.
Mom! Which uncle?
I'm not saying I'm black. It's probably. Hey, stop. No name calling.
No name calling, but it's his name.
Right? Because he was dating all these women, four women. He worked at this nursing home, and he was dating four women at the same nursing home, y'all. They must have had four floors, and he was on just visiting different floors. But anyway, he had four different women believing that he was finna marry them, met their family, taking them, check this out, taking them to Louisiana, building houses during the time of Katrina, everything. All while he had a wife and kids at home.
So he had four people he was like, five he was lying
four,
to.
Four. Yeah, five. And then the women, when they found out, ooh, they came to the house knocking on the door. No, he gonna marry me. He gonna marry me because you told my mama you gonna marry me. You went to my mama's house. We getting married and we have the baby. And his wife said, he ain't have no baby because that nigga done got snipped. He ain't have no baby with you. He just lying. But anyway, wife done kind of lost her mind, left the kids with him and everything. But ain't nobody. And he introduced the women to the kids. The kids knew the women.
Oh, my God.
Girl, some Jerry Springer crap. So this could happen. This could happen, y'all.
Man, he's still alive?
I know. But this dude was true to the game. He had four women. Four. One, two, three, four.
And lives to tell the tale. Wow.
And live to tell the tale.
God works in mysterious ways.
The grace of God.
Shoo. And
he ain't got the wife no more. They best friends now, though.
The Lord has no respect of persons. Because if he had a respect of persons, it probably would have been a different outcome for that man.
I'm telling you, but he broke some heart. It was sad in the end, though, because them women was convinced that they was getting married and have babies and everything, and none of that was true.
Sad. Kayla, could you? Well, I'm not gonna ask you the question.
I can't imagine doing that to somebody.
Kristen, were you gonna ask me if I can imagine doing that to somebody? That's shade, Kristen. That ain't no shade. That's a dark cloud.
Oh, I'm not gonna
ask you that question.
I've seen Kayla sell a dream or two, so I'm not gonna
I've
ask
done
her.
Some low down stuff.
Yeah,
Lord forgives. Some men don't.
Yeah.
Wow, that was craziness. Okay, well, amazing,
okay, well,
but
that's
not
my story because I'm always coming with some stories, y'all. My
mom always has something to share, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Relevant.
Okay, I'll bleep his name out. Jenny's friends were really happy for her because Jenny really seemed to, like, be over the moon in love with this man. And to them, like, he really seemed to be in love with her, too. On her 20th birthday, Steve got her a black Cadillac Escalade, a 2007 black Cadillac Escalade. So, pretty recent. Mm-hmm. But Jenny insisted on making the monthly payments herself because she didn't want to financially depend on Steve.
Period. Fair. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Although it seemed like Jenny had her head in the clouds and just believed everything Steve was telling her, she didn't.
Okay.
Good for her. And was keeping an eye on her married lover.
Mm-hmm. And she should. She shouldn't even been with him.
She shouldn't have, right. She shouldn't be keeping an eye on no married man. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like she was cool with him being married and still spending time with his wife and probably boinking her. But she was not cool with him spending time with other women.
So she's okay with being the only mistress. Right. Just not a mistress of multiple or multiple mistresses.
Correct. Because she didn't see herself as a mistress. They were going to get married, according to him.
As his escape.
She just saw herself as like his wife in waiting. So yeah, she wasn't cool with him being with other women, but that's exactly what he was doing.
Oh,
yeah.
So he pulled an uncle, ma.
I ain't surprised.
After her birthday, it wasn't long before Jenny ended up seeing another woman leaving the condo where she and Steve would spend time together.
Wee.
Not good. According to Jenny's roommate at the time, Jenny confronted Steve about the other woman, but unsurprisingly, he lied and was like, I don't know what you're talking about. You're the only woman for me.
Whole time I'm married. So that's already a lie right there.
Well, the thing is, he thought his alibi was good because, you know, that's the hookup spot. That woman was for somebody else up in there, not just him. And it wasn't his condo.
It's possible. It's possible that he was probably like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I wasn't really there at the time, but she knows what his car looks like. Like, you know, Jenny's not no fool. I mean, she may be a dummy, but she's not no fool.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And a dummy and a fool.
And this is around the time that Jenny started hooking up with her ex again.
Oh, Jenny wasn't no fool.
Listen.
Shoot,
she said I could play games too. But
Jenny from the block. She grew up on the streets. Go ahead, Jenny.
She was doing her thing, but she was also like venting to Kevin about what Steve was doing, because like Steven was well aware of like her relationship with Kevin. So Steve was, or what's his name? Kevin was just kind of like one of those guys. It's just
like, you know, a side piece.
You know, you can go back to because he still loves you, type of thing.
Yeah.
According to Kevin, Jenny told him that, quote, I know the truth about what he's doing. He's been lying to me the whole time.
And was.
And is. And will always lie to you. Because the fact that she thought she was special is like what makes me sad.
That's the thing that sucks, is because he made her feel like she was special.
Yeah.
Just like I'm sure he made his wife feel like she was special at some point.
You know?
But if history will tell these people, and if y'all listen, they never leave the wife. They never do.
No. And somehow people think the wife won, but it's like, no, girl. Like, you still need to get checked. You're in a married relationship. You are in a marriage. You still need to go get checked for STDs. Like, you're not winning.
You better.
You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't touch them. Give me that check. Make sure we straight up in this house and know I'm going to have my own side piece. And this will be a situationship.
It's giving Will and Jada.
That's why they never leave the wife, because she going to take half or more.
Of everything they got.
Cheaper to keep her.
It's cheaper to keep her.
Mm-hmm. But did Jenny bow out gracefully and realize she was wasting her time with Steve?
No.
Oh, no. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, because she looks a little nutty.
She was still messing with him, but she was like hung up on Steve. Like, she wasn't letting it go. She actually started stalking the other woman that Steve was cheating on her with. The woman's name was Leah Ignani. And according to Leah, she and Steve had met early in May, which is just diabolical because that's the month that he got the car for Jenny. Like, that was her birthday month, and that's when he met his new girl. So just disrespectful. On top of disrespectful.
She was the salesperson. It's okay.
I was about to say, she probably sold him the Cadillac.
And that at some point in June, she noticed a woman driving a black Escalade following her after she would leave Steve's downtown condo.
Wee, that's Jenny from the block.
Jenny's on your block, looking crazy with a Glock. Okay. Mm-hmm. The vehicle was following her home, like would circle her block and then park on her street. And this went on for weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Jenny was really about that life. She what was she unhinged. Gonna do?
Unhinged. About a married man. Like, girl, let it go.
Right? He's not even your man.
Let it go. Wow. This is really, really embarrassing.
That means Steve got some power.
Oh, okay. No, you push him.
No, she's protecting her bag. Come on.
What? Well, we'll get to it. I mean, she wanted to make the payments on her car, right? To, like, make sure she wasn't financially dependent on him. He couldn't take it away from her type of thing, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. I think she really was in love with him. I genuinely think she was in love with him. And I just think stuff that she went through in her childhood and stuff just kind of, like, really started to play on her mind, and, like, abandonment and all that type of stuff. And she just lost it.
Mom, some people are totally okay with going crazy over a person. Yeah. Like, they're like, what is the other option?
Yeah. Like, I'd rather die than be that embarrassed and chase after a man that is, like, embarrassing me in the streets like this. But some people are like, no, like, this is my everything. I'm going to fight for it.
And she was 19. She's just a baby. Her brain ain't even developed all the way. So,
well, she's 20 at this time.
She's still a baby. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But I wasn't acting like this at no 20 years old.
Show us. Fast forward to July 1st, Jenny was still messing with Steve. And when she was at the condo that day, she found some used condoms.
Ooh wee!
Which probably made her feel like, well, we're not using condoms, so who are you using them with?
Mm-hmm.
At least he's using them, girl.
I could smell that room.
Ew!
But the thing is, Dad, Steve, did you buy the condo? Ain't no other brother getting on?
You got
squatters, right?
He monopolized the condo space.
I'm sure there's multiple rooms, okay?
Oh, okay. Make it make sense.
Uh-huh.
Mom said,
But no, like, honestly, I think seeing the evidence of his infidelity, like, to her, and then blatant in her face, I think she just snapped. And on that very same day, she reached out to a man named Adrian Gilliam Jr., who she'd known for a couple weeks, and asked if he could sell her a gun.
Ooh-wee!
Oh, yeah. She wasn't for play.
No, she was going to take Steve out. Mm-hmm.
But there were other aspects of her life that were overwhelming, and the main one was her finances.
Mm.
Earlier that summer, her roommate ended up moving back to Pennsylvania, which meant that Jenny had to pay for the $990 rent plus utilities all by herself.
Well, why the heck did she offer to pay that dollar Cadillac note?
Shoot, I would have said, matter of fact, I changed my mind.
Yeah, you can give me this as a gift.
And then mind you, the payments for the Escalade, because she's paying on that, were $800 a month.
Come on, girl.
I was just going to say, that's the rent right there.
Absolutely. And then she had another car. So the car that she had before Steve gave her the Escalade was a Kia. And she gave it to a friend that was driving it and said they would take over the payments.
Mm-hmm.
But they came back to her and was like, yo, like, I don't want this anymore. Like, can you take the car back? And Jenny ends up finding out that they weren't paying on it for at least a couple months. So she's already, like, in the red when she gets the car back. So she was at the point where just everything was so overwhelming. She was ignoring her phone because bill collectors were calling so much. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
Yeah.
And it got so bad that on July 2nd, she had a couple ads up on Craigslist selling her kitchen and living room furniture.
Wow.
So, you know, she was trying. And I do, at this point, like, I do feel bad for her because some of these things just were not in her control.
Yeah.
I think her main mistake was obviously messing with a married man. But also, if he's going to give you something, girl, let him pay for it.
Let him pay for it.
Don't put that on yourself to prove a point.
Right. Who are you proving it to? Him?
And then stop tripping off that other side piece and go make it do what it do.
Go get
the money from the Negro and get caught up. Then go crazy.
Or, like, just go live your life because you're so young and this, you know, mid-30s man is really messing with your head like that. Like, I could never.
Yeah.
Who had Jenny's back?
Let him pay a couple bills.
Who was telling Jenny the truth, spitting game to her?
I don't know. I hope her friends were keeping it real. But, like, we know, you only make a decision that you want to make. It doesn't matter what people around you think or say.
Yeah.
But one thing I'm gonna give it to Jenny, she's about business. She wanna pay her bills, cause that car would have been repo if it was mine. Kill who? Kill what? Take this back. I can't afford that. I would have caught up on that Kia and take that Escalade back. The Escalade was the same price as my rent.
Yep.
Pay my own. I ain't asked for this. I don't want that big old truck. It's just me. I ain't even got no kids. Put that back.
And it's a gas guzzler. Take this on back. No shade. Like you said, Ma, I would just got pregnant by him. And said, now you owe me child support.
Secure the bag.
He ain't got no integrity. He ain't even pay her.
He would have to pay her. He in the limelight.
If she got pregnant, he would have did probably everything he could to like get her to not keep it or something.
Only way she would have did something, she would have bribed him.
Then she may be the one that's
on the other end of it.
Yeah, literally the only one gone.
Mm-hmm. Kevin apparently let her use his computer to post the ads, and he later told police that, quote, I know she was stressed out. I know Jenny. And she's never been stressed out like that before, end quote. So, you know, dark times, man, dark times. The same day Jenny used Kevin's computer to post the ad, she met up with her man, Steve.
Ooh.
Community Steve. At Corner Pub, which was a downtown sports bar. And a little after midnight, she ended up being arrested.
Oh.
Because she refused to take a breathalyzer test when she was pulled over because she was driving and she gave a little intoxicated. Mm-hmm. Jenny was taken to jail while Steve and the friend were free to go.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So now she's going to jail over this man.
Man, Steve got 9 lives when it comes to that drinking thing. He ain't got that one time yet.
Jenny probably feels like, wow, like this piece of loving. Like, you know, he literally just let me sit in jail.
Well, okay, so he didn't. Jenny begged Steve to come to the police car to talk to her before she was taken to jail. Like, she was, like, telling the police officer, like, please just tell him to come here and stuff like that. And Steve would not come. But he did bail her out. Like, he paid for her bail.
Okay.
But he didn't go get her.
Mm.
And that really made her mad. Later that day when she saw him, she was really pissed and was, like, going off of him. Like, why didn't you come get me? And he kind of brushed it off and was like, we'll talk about this later.
Shoot, you got a wild one. You don't even know.
You don't even know. There's a look in the eye. Like, I'm looking at her right now. I'm like, bro, like, something's off.
Like, she's cute and all, but there's a little glint in her eye that's like, don't play with her. Because she's ready to lose it all.
I'll chop your body up.
She's not for play.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And why couldn't he pick her up? Because he was at Leah's apartment instead.
Ooh, he has moved on.
Like, wow. But that's not what he's telling her. We're going to get to it. So I know he's deceased, but like I said, he really was a piece of crap. Like, this is not, he's doing all this stuff with a wife and at least 2 kids at the house. Because I don't know if his other sons were living with them, but you have a whole family and you're still finding a way to get out of the house every night and be out here gallivanting around town.
And then you still lying to Jenny. If you don't want to deal with her, let her go.
Right. I don't think that's what he wanted. I think he still wanted to deal with her. I just think it was getting to the point that it was maybe a little heavier than he wanted.
Yeah.
Even though he told her he wanted to marry her. So I really can't tell you what he was thinking, but I've seen it happen plenty of times.
A player gon' play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So remember how Jenny hit up the guy, Adrian, about a gun?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, on July 3rd, she texted him and asked if he could bring the gun to Dave and Buster's where she worked and she would buy it from him. So he agreed and showed up between 5 and 6 p.m. before her shift started.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian said he was really going through some financial issues himself, and that's why he sold her the 9mm for only $100.
Only $100?
I mean, listen, he needed it.
Dang.
How much they usually cost?
I mean, between like 2 and 7. Five. I mean, it can get really expensive, but like the cheapest I think you'll get is maybe $250.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's like nowadays, so I don't know. It just depends. Either way, $100 for a gun, I'm not mad about it. He taught her how to use it and everything, like right there in the Dave and Buster's parking lot.
Hmm.
Wow. That's wow.
Pre-boat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She got a 2-in-1, a gun and a training session
for $100.
That's a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Investigators had a feeling that when Jenny purchased that gun, she wasn't purchasing it for protection.
No, no, no.
Early during the day on July 3rd, so this is after Jenny was pissed about Steve not picking her up from the jail, she and Steve shared a back and forth text conversation around 10 a.m. and it went like this. At 10:05, at 10:05, Jenny said, "Baby, I might have a breakdown. I'm so stressed."
That's how she said it.
I'm assuming. 10:06, Steve says, "Everything gonna be okay." 10:21, Jenny says, "Baby, I might need to go to the hospital. Baby, what's wrong with me? I can hardly breathe." At 10:27, Steve goes, "Where are you?" At 10:30, Jenny says, "I just want this pain in my chest to go away." At 10:32, Steve goes, "You want me to come see about you?" At 10:34, Jenny says, "If it don't go away, I'm going to the hospital." At 10:35, which is a minute later, so he's like texting her back.
He's concerned.
Promptly, he says, "Okay, please let me know. I'm here if you need me." And this conversation happened before she texted Adrian about meeting her at work to buy the gun. Then around 4 p.m., she texted him at 4:04. She said, "Baby, I have to be with you tonight. I don't care where." He didn't text back yet. And then at 4:16, she goes, "Tell me you're going to be with me." But Steve didn't respond.
Ooh, this is juicy.
After she purchased the gun and at the end of her shift that night, she told her manager, quote, "My life is just shit and I should end it."
Wow.
Now, mind you, I know she was going through a really tough time, like financially, and that pressure was probably just taking such a toll on her that she didn't see any other way out. But she had help. Like, when she told Steve about her financial problems, she asked him for $2,000 to, like, help her, you know, get caught up and stuff. And he sent it to her.
Oh, okay.
He gave it to her. And not only that, he told her that she could move into the condo where he had been freaking and, yeah. He said she could move into the condo so she didn't have to worry about, like, paying rent and stuff like that.
He had love for her. What the heck?
Yeah, he was just not a one-woman man, clearly, you know, but he cared about her, I think.
But she wanted more.
She wanted everything. She wanted all.
She wanted what he promised her in the beginning.
What he promised her, exactly. Mm-hmm. And Gross Kevin, who was working at White Castle at the time, by the way,
White Castle.
Not mad at it. He was even looking to open a line of credit under his name for her to use to pay for some of her things. A man working at White Castle is like, "I'm going to give you a credit card that I'm going to pay on with my salary so you can go and, like, be okay." And then he even offered to let her move back in with him and then take them on a vacation so she could, like, relax and not be so stressed.
Wow. She had men in her life.
What White Castle was paying back then?
That part.
But like Mom said, you know, I think she just wanted Steve in the capacity in which he promised her. She wanted him to be faithful to her. She wanted him to marry her. And once she realized that he was cheating on her, it was like, okay, if I can't have you, like, no one can.
Wow, it wasn't about the money at all then. Like, yeah, she was stressed and it brought her probably to a bad place.
Yeah.
But she had help on the money side or she was going to get it. It wasn't really about that for her. It was about Steve.
I think it was, like, the betrayal that she felt. Like, it was just... on top of everything else, it was too much for her.
Right.
So on the night of the 3rd, Steve was at home with his family and put his children to sleep around 11 p.m. He then texted Jenny and told her that he was on the way to the condo. And I'm not sure if they were intimate or anything, but at some point, Steve fell asleep, leaned back on the couch. Jenny shot him 4 times. And from the scene, it looks like he died before he even got a chance to wake up.
Oh my God.
Like a saving grace to where, like, you didn't see who did it to you. You didn't suffer. Like, that's the only positive I see there. Detectives believe that Jenny sat next to Steve's body for a while after she shot him before she put the gun to her head and shot herself.
Good Lord.
She was next to him in a way that once she shot herself, she could just fall into his lap, like just fall over on him. And from the bloodstains on Steve's shirt and shorts that match Jenny's, they feel that that's exactly what she did. Like, she fell into his lap, but ended up sliding down his lap and onto the floor, why the gun was found underneath her body. So she shot herself, dropped the gun, fell on top of him, and then slid off of him and landed on top of the gun.
Wow.
Mama called it.
15 minutes in. Detective McCrary felt that Jenny was very intentional with the murder-suicide plot she'd planned, saying, quote, "This certainly looks like an attempt at posing. I mean, she's dressed in all this pink, which is very feminine and all of that, and trying to have her body on his. It is as though it's a symbolic kind of possession. This guy is mine. Mm-hmm. I'm on him."
Mm-hmm. And to till death do us part. And matter of fact, it wasn't even them parting in death. It was like we went together. Yeah, rooting them together. Yeah.
No. In the ultimate game plan was to show everybody,
yeah, hey, this is my guy.
We were together. Yeah. No question about it. No guessing. We were together.
Yeah.
That's insane. She was sending
a message.
She absolutely was to that Leah chick and probably Michelle too.
And used her own life to do it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, like, that is terrifying. Just hours before the murder and suicide, Steve and Jenny were texting with Jenny asking Steve if he loved her. So she texted him like, "You love me?" And Steve replied, "I love you, baby." And then she told him that, quote, "I'm going to have all of you soon."
That's what she said?
Yes. And then he responded, "Yes, you will."
Ooh.
Which is just diabolical.
Steve, you don't even know.
Because he was with another woman.
What when this he girl him. Is playing. And you think you're saying, you think it's just talking trash because that's what you do. This girl is dead serious about you.
Dead serious.
But she tried to give him an out. Because if y'all remember when they were where she was at work before the gunman came, she was, you know, texting so she wasn't feeling good and all that stuff to see if he cared and all that stuff. And then she texted him again about seeing him and he didn't respond. So she's like, oh, okay.
But I think it was she was trying to get to see him because she had already planned to see homeboy Adrian, because she texted him at 4:00. She had Adrian come between 5 and 6. So she had to at least have let Adrian know, you know, a good amount of time, at least let's just say an hour before. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't know the timeline on when she texted Adrian that day to come. I just know he came between 5 and 6 and she texted him at 4 talking about, "I need to be with you tonight." So it's in my opinion, like a setup. Like she was already planning on doing what she was going to do.
Yeah, maybe.
Despite investigators finding gunshot residue on Jenny's hand and establishing that the gun used to kill both Jenny and Steve was the same gun she purchased from Adrian, Steve's family and Jenny's family don't believe that this is how things went down. And they feel like that someone else had to be responsible for the murders.
Y'all, the writing is on the wall. And yeah, she looks cute and all. But, Jenny was a little nut-nut.
Yeah, she was a nut-nut. She'd been traumatized from day one.
Yeah.
And her little ticker ain't ticking.
Right? Yeah, it's not doing what it's supposed to do.
And she was showing signs. Like, at Dave and Buster's, when she told her boss, like, "I just feel like I need to end my life," type thing. Like,
that's which, like, was that night right before she killed him.
That's, like, heavy.
I know. I mean, even just with the things about stalking the Leah woman. You know what I'm saying?
Leah
obviously had to tell Steve, like, "Hey, you know, I noticed this car when I leave your place, and it follows me." Like, I know Steve had an idea that homegirl was still, was following
All she Leah. Had to say was Black Escalade. He knew who it was.
Exactly. But what is he still doing? "I love you, baby. You know, I'm going to have the rest of you." "Yes, you will." Like, he's still doing all this extra stuff.
Lying to her.
Absolutely.
Playing with her heart. That's why she shot him 2 times in it.
In the heart.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Playing with my heart. Boom, boom. He was already dead when she shot him in the head. But she sent the message.
She wanted to send a message.
Wow.
Good Lord. I never want to be in that type of pain. I'll never love
someone.
No. I'll never be obsessed or whatever you want to call that.
Nope. I'll go numb before any of that ever happens.
Me too. I'll buy a rose.
I'm a hoe. You might as well.
I'll be for everybody before I be for one person and go crazy.
Right. I'm on the spree and see what I can get from everybody before I take my life.
I know that's right. I'm not mad at that at all.
Me either. If it's a game we shall play, then we shall play it.
And I will win.
Game on. Mm-hmm.
When Steve died, he had no last will or testament, so his assets were frozen pending probate of his estate.
Golly!
Yeah. So basically, they like needed to figure out how much he had and like who to divvy it out to and all that type of stuff. So he died July 4th, 2009. And on October 15th, 2010, Michelle, his wife, went to a Nashville judge and asked that a small portion of his assets be unfrozen so she could pay for the kids' expenses.
Period. And the house.
Mm-hmm. And the judge agreed, and each of his children were given $500,000.
That's awesome.
So that's really, really helpful.
I mean, is there a question to be had? What's the question? She was a wife. Didn't you get it? She should have gotten it.
I mean, I don't. When you have that much money, I think it's better to have, like, you have an estate. So if you don't designate who that estate goes to or how it's supposed to be divvied up, you're basically leaving it to like the law to figure out.
Because the law will take every single little debt that you owe out of your money first before they even think about giving it to your family.
But he was married. What's his is hers, and what's hers is his.
I know. I guess, like, the law. Maybe when you get to a different tax bracket, Mom, like things are different.
Yeah. It's not like automatically goes to your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I ain't reached that.
Because even with life insurance policies, you have to like designate who it goes to. And if you don't, like the law or the people that are in charge of those policies with the company, they decide like who's going to get it.
Yeah, I understand that part. But I'm just like, dang, what? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Steve loved his family, his children. He loved to go fishing and to work in his restaurant, Grand Nine.
He ain't never have time. I don't know when he's doing all that, but.
Okay. But he also liked to spend long nights out on the town and in bars and with other women. So, yes, there were great things about him, but yes, there were also awful things about him. And it's okay to acknowledge and have an opinion about both. We aren't disrespecting the dead. We can talk about how the dead was disrespecting the living when they were still alive. But shout out to his family and his children, and our prayers go out to them because that pain they didn't deserve.
No, period. They probably didn't even see it coming.
Yeah, definitely didn't see it coming.
No, but I'm a, well, I guess I can't say that, but I want to say, this is what I want to say that, but I probably can't say. His wife knew something. Because ain't his wife give him no permission every night he gone? Every night? Yeah. All night? Every night? He had to sleep sometime, even if he was doing family man thing during the day. And then at night, he was a hoe by night. I mean, was his restaurant 24/7? I don't know. Make it make sense. But she knew something, but she was comfortable. Maybe she had a side piece. Most of them do.
I hope she did. I hope she was getting it while he was getting it, you know, something.
Yeah. No judgment. I'm just saying, you know, that sixth sense told you something. But it's not about her. And like I said, nobody should go through that. And not being insensitive. But, I mean, this is life. This is life. It's messy. Real life. But it's life, you know. And hate it for them all. But, shoot.
So we say rest in peace to Steve. And we actually, like, genuinely mean it. Even though we don't agree with all the decisions he made while he was here.
Period.
Jenny, dang, girl. You could have, you know, this could have turned out so differently for you. You had so much life to live. I just wish you didn't, like, waste it on someone that obviously wasn't, you know, down for you like you were down for them.
Right. That part. Right. Yeah.
So that's our case for this week, y'all.
Woo! That was wild. Coming.
Wow.
I enjoyed it. I knew I was going to have fun with you guys.
Yeah, that was so wow. Huh?
I had a good time. I just, it's so sad.
Yes.
Because it's like, you know, this is what, you know, Negroes do type thing.
But it's not even just Negroes. Let's not do that.
Well, that's not what I mean. I'm talking about, like, men. Like, this is what men do. But it sucks because, like, if women really were to take what men say for what they really mean, like, what they say, we could go just as insane as Jenny did.
We all would be in straitjackets.
And then sex is always up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Funky. Just spreading that doggone thing. Wet willy around. It's nasty. Just nasty.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Yeah.
So let us know what you guys thought about this episode. We always care. We always want to know. And thank you for listening so much. This is feeling like a longer one because you know when always. Mom comes on, it's just always gonna be longer. But yeah, thank you again. Thank you so much. If you guys enjoy the episode at all, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and even Facebook. It really, really helps the show grow. And yeah, as always, before we go,
be safe, protect your peace, and protect your space. So we don't have to cover your case, friend.
Period.
Bye.
Bye, friends.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. You can stream all of our episodes on Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and even Facebook. It's the best way to help the show grow, and it's completely free. For bonus content, you can find us on Patreon. And for more information about the show, you can visit blacktruecrime.com. See you next time.